Welcome to Running for Real, a global community with a shared love and curiosity for running. Together we reconnect with the reasons why we love to run and discover ways it helps us become better people. Whether it's the quiet moments of a morning run while the rest of the world still sleeps, or befriending the strangers next to you at the start line of a race, we are here to connect with others who see running as the common thread that weaves our lives together. Come join me, Tina Muir, as I talk with people from all walks of life, united by a love of running. Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 294 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you for joining me. I'm excited that you are here, and we have such a cool guest today who has previously worked in a role that I don't think we've ever had a previous podcast guest take on, but also a really amazing story in basically turning your life around when things don't turn out how you hoped. This is such a good lesson for runners, and you are going to easily see why. She is a runner. She's done marathons on all the continents of the world. And I guess I should just introduce her. I am excited that today we're going to be bringing on Dr. Melissa Corley Carter. Now, Melissa, as I mentioned, has run a marathon on each of the seven continents, and she wrote a book to share her journey. But a lot of what we're talking about today is that I mentioned that things didn't work out how they should. You're going to hear all about that. She was a rocket scientist. How cool is that, by the way? A rocket scientist, had this lifelong dream from childhood, found out, I'm not going to ruin any more of the story, but let's just say that it is a really rollercoaster of a story and a powerful way of hearing how running is the therapy, is the healer, is the metaphor for all she needed to turn her life around. This is a really powerful story, a really inspirational woman, and I know you are going to resonate with this episode. So without any further ado, let's hear from one of our sponsors and be right to this episode with Melissa Corley Carter. Thank you to Tracksmith for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. I appreciate all that Tracksmith has done for the running community, and I want to share a bit of a story today. It's a bit off tangent, but I think you're going to see why this relates. So in the past, before probably about 5 years ago, I thought that clothes were made to be bought, they would be used for a little while, and then they kind of started falling apart, and that was just the way clothes were. And part of that was my usual purchasing of items that I wore day to day from stores like H&M and Primark and other stores that just are typical fast fashion. They're cheap, but they're also cheaply made. And I listened to a podcast recently where they said that the average clothing item from these type of fast fashion stores is designed to last 5 washes. 5 washes, 5 to 10 washes before it starts falling apart. And I was totally in that zone. I mean, I thought that was the way to do it. I pushed out of my head the fact that if a shirt costed $150, what were they paying the people who made it? Yes, that was wrong, but that was what I was doing. However, Tracksmith changed this, because once I put on their products, they were comfortable, they were quality, they felt good, the materials they used, I was going to say the ingredients, the materials they used were strong and durable and could handle the tough life that running clothes have. And so I had these products, I still have them. This is coming up to 4 years later. I still have Tracksmith items, and they look and feel and act exactly the same as the day I got them. They are wonderful. They have lasted well. And after learning more about the fast fashion industry, the biggest thing that experts say is that we need to be able to keep a hold of our clothes. We need to be able to purchase durable clothing that is made to last. It's not about buying cheap stuff. It's not even about buying sustainably made stuff. It's about buying things that last and wearing them for as many times as you can. So by me wearing Tracksmith all day, every day, I am doing that. By me purchasing Tracksmith items that are built to last and do last and have stood the test of time so far, that is the way to do it. Not only that, Tracksmith not only has quality clothes, but they also, as I mentioned, do good for the community. So 5% of sales from your purchase will go to Runners for Public Lands, which is my favorite nonprofit. And you will also get free shipping with that order. So you, my friend, can go to the link in the show notes, or you can go to tracksmith.com/collections/running-for-real. So go to tracksmith.com/collections/running-for-real, or go to the show notes to go check out my favorites and get that special offer of using code TINA15. Melissa, thank you so much for joining me on the Running For Real podcast. I'm excited that you are here.
Thank you so much for having me, Tina. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And I didn't clear this with you before I brought this up, but you just told me that you listened to a recent episode with Yacine Daboon, and you loved it, and all the topics he covered were things that you love to talk about. So I would love to hear from your perspective, like, what was it about that episode in some detail? Like, what was it that really spoke to you? Because I think that will shape some of our conversation and also get the listeners to think, huh, you know, I noticed that with the episode, or, oh, I hadn't thought about that. So what was it there that you enjoyed?
You know, I think, great question. I think a lot of it was the sort of the meditative aspect of running, the sort of repetitive motion, but being out in nature and the just healing power of being in nature and the healing power of running. I know he was talking about recovery from, you know, different kinds of things, but I, you know, I've experienced a sort of major life recovery from shattered dreams, as it were. So while I wasn't necessarily dealing with physical recovery or addiction recovery, I was dealing with identity recovery, as it were, and really questioning who I was. I actually spent 20 years wanting to be an astronaut. And when that didn't work out, I literally didn't know what to do next. And I had been running by then. So, you know, while I wasn't necessarily, I love the question you asked about if he consciously realized at the time kind of what was going on with this, with running, or if it was more retrospective. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as I've thought about that, I know that I at the time loved being in nature and loved just being with alone with my thoughts. I don't even know what I would think about when I was running, but it was more just the being alone in nature, feeling one with the universe, as it were. But in retrospect, looking back on the time when I was running a lot more than I am now, when I was actually doing a lot of marathons and a lot of marathon training, I see how that literally kind of launched me into the next phase of my life and career. It led me to mindfulness. It led me to actual meditation, as opposed to, you know, the meditative aspect of running itself. It led me to hot yoga, which is something I absolutely love. That also kind of in combination led me to the world of mindfulness. So, just interesting that those questions that you were asking, I was like, huh, yeah, I totally resonate with that. And also what I love, the whole aid station thing. I mean, yeah. I've been the recipient of the wacky people at aid stations, you know, being supportive. You know, my first marathon was the Big Sur. And I remember near the end, you run by the Point Lobos State Reserve, and there's park rangers out there giving high fives and hugs, and people on the side of the road with signs saying free hugs. The support aspect in a race is so awesome, especially when you're dragging and it's near the end and you just want to see someone smiling.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. And you've given people a few snippets of things that we can look forward to in this conversation. So I'm trying to think about where to begin here. So you mentioned there about wanting to be an astronaut. And I think that's probably the thing that would have, you know, at least in my mind, jumped out, because it's one of those examples, especially as a woman, where I would imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or tell me how this went, was this something you were a little girl saying, I want to be an astronaut? Because it seems astronaut is something that people pick and it's like, I'm going to do this. Like, it's not like something like a fireman or a, people around me with the running world might say, I'm going to be an Olympian or whatever. Like, those things are kind of fluid, but an astronaut, like, that is a very narrow,
high, I mean, Olympian has a few spots, but astronaut, like even more so. Tell us about like the background there. Like, was that something from early ages?
It was actually when I was in fifth grade, an astronaut came and talked to my class. And it's funny because I don't actually remember it, but my mom tells me that I came home and was all excited and decided I wanted to be an astronaut and that was it. So, incidentally, I found out, I asked my science teacher in later years who that astronaut was, and I actually met him, about 12 years ago. I met him again, as it were, as an adult, and said, "Hey, you know, you," of course, I was like, you came and talked to my class in fifth grade. And then of course I made him feel old, but in any case, it was really cool to kind of go full circle and meet him. And actually I had met him a couple other times too. I met him during a robotics competition in eighth grade. So there was all this sort of, or high school. Mm-hmm. So there's all these sort of connections, but it's funny because they're actually, at least in my experience, there actually are a lot of kids who say they want to be astronauts. It's a pretty popular thing, kind of like firemen. So lots of people wanted to be an astronaut when they were kids, but then grew out of it, as it were. Yeah. Mostly it's grown out of, and I did not grow out of it. So I did for 20 years, follow the path. I did all the math and science, and I got engineering degrees, and I got a PhD in astronautical engineering, and, you know, could say I was a rocket scientist. And so I did all those things. And for me, it was always bad eyesight. I knew I had bad eyesight. I knew I didn't actually qualify, but I crossed my fingers that they would be allowing eye surgery at some point. And then they did. And I went out and got LASIK. And so I had 20/20 vision. And when I was finally able and qualified to apply, I applied. And they said that my eyesight before I got LASIK was so bad that I was disqualified anyway. So that I had not planned for. So it was pretty soul crushing, and I didn't know what to do next. So that was sort of, that's been the major shock and recovery of my life, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people listening would have had something where, you were absolutely confident your life was going in one direction. Mm-hmm. You felt it, you knew it, you were already living that life in your mind, and then it changes course. And as you said, soul crushing. But as you, I'm sure, will go on to tell us, like, having spent that much time of your life focused on it, doing all the pieces you need, and then a part of your body being the part that stops you, was there... How did that relationship with your body go from there? Because it's interesting, and I can't wait to hear the story of how you started. You're on here because of running, because of what your body does. Yet it was your body that was the piece that couldn't reach that dream of yours that you'd had for such a long time. Was there a time where you were just like mad at your body or struggling to understand it? Or was it the opposite?
That's a really great question. I think I was mad at first. This was actually 10 years ago. We're actually coming up on literally like the 10 year anniversary, April 19th of when I found out. So, I see now that my body saved me, and I'm so grateful. I can't even describe, because I know that was not all the things I did to get to that point are integral pieces of my life, but I'm not here to be an astronaut. I'm here to do something different and something bigger, obviously. But I think at the time I was really upset. I was like, eyesight, seriously? How is that possible? And you know, it's funny.
Get the surgery, like you fixed it.
Right. Like, I can see 20/20. What's the problem here? Like, and so it was sort of unbelievable. It was sort of surreal, just hard to process. And I think incidentally, I struggled a little bit also with the idea that, and I mean, I absolutely love my parents for this, so I'm going to come back around, but I was a little bit mad at my parents for teaching me when I was little that I could do anything that I wanted, you know? And I was like, how can you say that to a child? And then they grow up and want to do the thing, and then they don't get to do it. Like, they can do anything you set your mind to. That's what people always say. And Wow. What I realize in retrospect is, first of all, a concept of doing anything we set our minds to can lead us astray because our minds are not where the solutions are, if that makes sense. We're so taught and conditioned and trained to figure things out with our minds. But it's really, the mind is for asking questions, asking the universe, what am I here for? And learning to allow the answers in, not necessarily through the head, but through our interaction with the universe on a daily basis. You know, what's the synchronicity? What are the signs and the clues and the whatever else? And so when I look back on it now, I realize that what I really wanted, and so this is the core of everything I do. So I'm a coach now, and I help people kind of live their own dreams. And the core question that I ask is, what do you really want? You know, in this goal, what is your goal behind the goal? And when I asked myself what I really wanted in becoming an astronaut, I realized that it was came out of an intuitive knowing that I am spiritually connected to the universe. Like it was a desire to be one with the cosmos, as it were. And when you're in fifth grade and an astronaut comes and talks to you, that's not something you sit around and verbalize is spiritual connection to the universe, you know, but maybe that's the tangible interpretation. Like, oh, cool, I want to do that. And also I think I have just always wanted to inspire people to find the greatness in themselves the way that astronauts always inspired me. So there were real reasons that I don't necessarily know that I connected with consciously, maybe more unconsciously. And that's what, with time and distance, I have been able to see was the gift in that rejection and the gift in my eyesight. The cool thing is that everything I focus on now and focus, like I use eyesight type words all the time, but vision is so much bigger than eyesight, right? Like what's your vision for your life? What's your vision for, you know, your children's lives or what, you know, they have their own vision obviously, but you know, what is our vision for our business if we're creating it? What's our vision for the future of humanity? What are we working towards? That stuff is not measured on a 2020 scale, right? So while eyesight kind of stopped me, I feel like it opened the door to this bigger vision of what life is really all about, if that makes sense.
Mm. I want to go into that journey, that process to reach that point. But as you're talking, one thing is really jumping out to me in that when I think of a rocket scientist or if I thought of an astronaut, I actually am quite fascinated with the space. I've read books on it and things like that, but not to be about that, but it seems very like small numbers and decimals and facts and stats and everything is very precise. Mm-hmm. And yet what you're saying here is kind of the opposite of that in terms of trust and mm-hmm. faith. Not so much in the religious terms, but faith in, as you said, what you yes. were meant to do. Mm-hmm. I guess, I don't want to say destiny, but like that, I'm very much bought into that approach 100%. But it seems like those two are two completely different approaches to the world. So how did those meet in the middle? Because I'm assuming that part of you with numbers and chemistry and maths is still there. So how did they come to peace with each other?
Yes, it's interesting. As I think about it, you know, I did really well in the math and the science, I think because I did focus on it and I practiced it and I studied it. But incidentally, I was actually always intuitively better at English and writing papers and finding meaning. Like I studied hard and I got all A's in my math and science classes, but in English, I could whip out a 10-page paper on Hamlet in one night and get an A+ on it. Like it just, I did equally well in the subjects, but it came more naturally to me, the whole English side of it.
Did you acknowledge that at the time or were you like I'm good at math, like that's my...
No, I did because I really did love my English classes and so I loved all my subjects. I think I probably noticed it was kind of, I think it was more annoying than anything else, like why can't the math part be easier? And I think it also did kind of show up when I went to college, because in college, when I was taking engineering classes and math classes, it was also really hard. And I found myself struggling and I was frustrated. And I think that these are all like little signs that the universe was saying, this might not be your strong suit. So yes, I can do the math, and I have been told that I'm very logical. So, but it's sort of like this melding of the logical side and the trust and the faith. And I think it took me a while to really believe that I could leap into the trust and faith, because I had grown up in such this sort of more logical world. And, you know, this is the logical path you're supposed to follow in life. And we don't do woo woo. We don't do the whole, you know, spiritual faith universe thing. And so part of me thought, like, that's what you can do for fun, but that's not how you make a living, you know? And I think sort of that, you're supposed to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer or like whatever else, engineer. So a little bit of societal conditioning there, I guess. But the thing is that even in the, when I had engineering jobs, what I was best at was the people, was getting to know people. And, you know, in my first assignment in the Air Force, I was taking MBA classes at night. So I would leave work, I would go to class, and then I would come back at, you know, like 10 or 11 at night with a pizza for the guys who I knew were still there working. And that was, I knew how to build a team and get people to work well together and get them to work towards a common goal just by being the one who was just interested in them and understanding and, you know, cared. So mm-hmm. It was really about, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I was always, you know, A plus on the caring and the engineering side of it, while I could do it if I worked hard enough, did not come as naturally. So this is all sort of, again, the logical and precise and decimal points was not my path. So it's been really freeing to be able to do what I'm naturally best at.
Thank you to Inside Tracker for sponsoring this episode of the Running Through podcast. Friends, I'm pretty disappointed right now. I was supposed to have my Inside Tracker test done tomorrow. I was going to envision some of you holding my hand while I got my blood taken, because I still hate needles. I still go every 3 months to get my Inside Tracker test because I really believe in it, but I still hate needles. I was going to envision you with me, and then I got bronchitis, and now I'm on antibiotics, and so I can't go for a few weeks. And I'm honestly disappointed, because I love seeing the results of my Inside Tracker tests. It makes me, I feel you can hear it in my voice, right? It makes me excited to even think about seeing the results, to see what things are now optimized, to see what things I have to work on and give me places to improve and how to do it. They give you specific foods to add to your diet, specific lifestyle changes to get you to where your body wants to be, and see if you can get that ever closer to optimized while also having a life too. It doesn't mean that you don't get to have a life too. I've managed to optimize most of mine over the years, and I still love to eat ice cream. I still have some chips or something like that each and every day. It doesn't mean that you're going to obsess over getting your body clean foods and healthy foods. It's just going to allow you to take a look at what's on the inside. As we move forward into racing season, we want to see where things are at. We want to be ready to go, and we want to be able to adapt so that we can go for it when the time is right for us within our own bodies and our own schedules. So thank you again to Inside Tracker for sponsoring this episode. You, my friend, can get 25% off by going to insidetracker.com/Tina. That will get you 25% off. insidetracker.com/Tina. Go check it out. And then in 2 weeks, you can come with me virtually to hold my hand as we go get our Inside Tracker test done together, and we can geek out over our results together. Sound like a deal? InsideTracker.com/Tina. Go check it out. So if you'll entertain me for a minute, feel free to say, I don't believe in looking back or what ifs, but it seems to me like there's a lot of, I was listening to, I'm very, very passionate about the sound. I haven't found a good way of explaining this, but about the climate emergency, about like raising the alarm on climate change. Mm-hmm. I was listening to an episode about coral, about coral mm-hmm. reefs, and how actually, even though it is estimated if we hit 2.5 degrees of warming, which we are well on track to do, that's going to destroy all of the coral. If we hit 1.5, that's still going to destroy 90%, up to 90% of the coral. The people who are working in this, experts, the scientists, the you know, the, I don't even know the names, but the people who are like in amongst the coral every day, they are actually optimistic, or at least the people on this podcast I listened to were. And that was because they said that they have figured out that working different together, so like a scientist working with the researcher and someone who is out in the field looking at the coral, working with the coral day, working alongside an engineer, they've figured out if they collaborate together, they can figure this out. They know they can. Is there any part of you or that rocket scientist, astronaut, aerospace engineering group that thinks that actually had your eyesight not been the thing, having someone like you, not necessarily you, but someone who has that different way of looking at the world, and even in terms of the, as you said, building teams and good at writing, maybe good at motivating people, is that piece missing? Like, could that make things even better, in your opinion? If, because I'm assuming most people are very number heavy, stats, analytics, like kind of everyone's the same, right?
So interesting. I do think, yes, the non-stereotypical engineer type in the midst of engineers is absolutely an asset. The other thing I'll say is that in my experience, not all engineers are stereotypical engineers. So there is certainly this kind of concept that we have in mind, and it's always played up in the movies and the whatever. And those people are out there. They certainly are. Uh-huh. But in any career field, people are people, and they really do have the same like core needs. They want to be appreciated. They want to do something they're passionate about. And so I think that in some ways it might be the actual stereotypes that block us from trying to understand those people and understand what motivates them. So if you could see every person as a human and try to discover their intrinsic motivations and what they're intrinsically passionate about in any career field, people who are doing that function, I absolutely believe will unleash all the creativity in the world and to solve these challenging problems like climate change and hunger and you know, feeding everyone on the planet. I there's so much untapped potential, I think, because people are kind of stuck and pigeonholed doing in a lot of cases work that doesn't feel important or that is overcome by events or you know, just focusing on the wrong priorities as a globe, as it were. But I do think that there is a growing number of people who are saying no to that and are saying, no, we want to focus on things that really matter. And so I am also optimistic. And I do think that there is awareness there that yes, we want to pair humanities with the sciences and integrate those. So we're, you know, not having one-sided educations. And there's, you know, I know Stanford, where I went to college, is actively working on that. Like how do we integrate ethics into our engineering community so that we don't just do things because we can, but, you know, maybe we ask questions about, should we be doing them? And you know, I'm sure they're not the only ones. So that is a thing that I think people are aware of. So anyway,
thank you for explaining that to me. I obviously work in a very non-traditional career area. I don't really know that side of the world. But thank you for explaining that. I want to get on to talking about you running a marathon on each of the 7 continents in a minute and your book, Running the World. But I want to just, on the topic of what we were just talking about there, finish off before we go into that with part of a quote you said, just to give people, based on what you said a few minutes ago, one more nudge. So if they are waiting for a sign to say it's time to take that leap of faith, leave that job you hate, yes, it may be a risk, but do it. You said, a new future for humanity is evolving. You are here to make a difference, not by what you do, but by being you. Expand on that a little bit. Say more.
Yes. So I think, again, what we are conditioned, I use the word conditioned a lot, but just sort of brought up to believe that we are our job. You know, when you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? We typically list things like astronaut, fireman, you know, whatever else, fire person, whatever. You know, we list a job. We don't list a state of being or I just want to be me. Like what we really should be saying and what we should be teaching our children to say when they're asked what they want to be when they grow up is, I want to be me. And because it's not about the work you do when you're completely aligned with who you are is that is the work you're here to do on the planet. That doesn't necessarily always equate to the job that brings home a paycheck. Sometimes it can. And that's, I mean, my hope is that we can all get paid to do work that we love. Like that's sort of ideal world. And I do think that is also a growing evolution where people are, particularly, I think in the pandemic, a lot of people realized, wow, you know, there's so much more capacity, more, obviously people had very different experiences in the pandemic, but part of it was sort of a liberation. If you're, you know, the great resignation, people are saying, I don't have to put up with this crazy job. And like, I can go into business for myself and do something this thing that I've always wanted to do. Why wait until retirement? You know, when you're exhausted and burned out and, you know, why not now? So the whole being you is allowing yourself to live your own life, not the life that everyone else expects or that, you know, you were taught was acceptable. It's following your own joy, following your own creativity, asking what lights me up and going and following that. And if it doesn't feel possible as far as money goes, can you do it as a hobby on the side at first and then see how it grows? And maybe it grows into you know, something that actually does bring home a paycheck, but it's really taking baby steps into becoming more of who you really are. And the rest of it just sort of works itself out. So it's not, you are not your job. You are not whatever profession label you attach. You are you, and anything past that is limiting.
Yes. Thank you so much for explaining that. Okay. So Running the World is the name of your book, which is about running a marathon on each of the 7 continents. We've already talked about what you were kind of working through as you were going through this journey. So tell us, running, you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but when was running in your life for the first time? Has it been with you all along?
It started for me a little bit later in life. I laugh about it. I was definitely not much of a runner when I was young. I was on the 7th grade track team and I ran hurdles. And I remember the only thing I remember about it basically was this one track meet where I was running and the runner next to me tripped over her hurdle and she fell. And I stopped to ask if she was okay. I'm not athletic and competitive,
I think.
so not super athletically competitive. That's me. So I didn't, that was my sort of last, stint as a competitive runner, I guess. And then, but I did Air Force ROTC in college and I was commissioned as an officer when I graduated. So, you know, when you're in ROTC, when you're in the military, you have a physical fitness test to pass. And so we ran in ROTC, obviously. And so I got in a little bit better shape when I was in college and I had runner friends, you know, who had grown up on track teams and things like that, who would run with me. And so that was pretty cool. So started a little bit in college. And then in my first assignment, I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And one of my friends from work, who was also, she was actually a reservist at the time, an Air Force officer, but also a civilian. And she was a really good athlete. And so she took me and another lieutenant on a lot of runs. And she took me on my first 8-mile run. And my legs were so wobbly after I did that the next day, but I had started to get in a little bit better shape. I was doing these longer runs and then I was talking to my mom about it and she said, hey, you know, there's a marathon in Big Sur and, Big Sur, California, one of the most beautiful places in the world. Yeah. And it was really a special place to me. And I thought this was September and the Big Sur marathon was in April. And I was like, well, gosh, I mean, the chance to run a marathon in Big Sur, that sounds cool. So, I mean, run a marathon had never crossed my mind. It was not on my bucket list, but I wanted to run a Big Sur. And I was like, I mean, I could do that. So I trained for it. And then when I went to the expo, they had a booth for the Seven Continents Club, which was this group that went around running marathons on all seven continents. And seriously, that the idea landed and I never looked back from that. I was like, I mean, why not? That's amazing. How cool is that? So, yeah. So that was that. And so I decided to do it.
And so where was this in terms of time frame with your big realization?
This was before. Yeah, this was before. So the first time I ran Big Sur was 2007. The astronaut thing happened in 2012. Incidentally, that was the year that I finished the continents. So I had run five of them. I had run five, and then it was actually right before Easter Island Rapa Nui Marathon that I found out about the astronaut thing. That was so 2012. This is like the cool, crazy realization I had as I looked back at sort of the progression of the marathons and the progression of my life story. So I was running, all the hard work I was doing in life in general were all sort of going on parallel paths. Meanwhile, I had actually started to be excited about running barefoot. I read the book Born to Run and I totally jumped on the bandwagon of the natural running movement. And that also helped me become more connected to my body, become more connected to the earth, and be more in that sort of meditative space. It was actually after the Antarctica marathon that I started doing hot yoga, and that was in 2011. So I had started doing hot yoga, and you know, they talk about mindfulness and what you learn on the mat you take out into the world. And I've always been super easily inspired, and so just the little phrases here and there and the little life wisdom nuggets would really resonate with me. And so there was all that going on, and then I got the news about the astronaut thing, and then 6 weeks later was the Rapa Nui Marathon on Easter Island. Mm. And Easter Island, I mean, with all the statues and just the huge mystery surrounding the island, it was...
Tell us a little bit about Easter Island for someone who may not know.
Yeah, so Easter Island is an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It's really far from everything else. And you may have seen pictures of the big giant heads that just sort of stick out of the ground. And they're enormous. They're way bigger than humans. And they're actually more than heads. They actually have bodies, but you typically think of them as just heads. So like the big giant heads or the statues. That's what Easter Island is really famous for. Incidentally, it's called Easter Island because the European explorers found it on Easter, but it is called Rapa Nui by the indigenous population. But interestingly enough, there's also other, like that's what it's known for, but there's other cultures that have come and gone. There was a sort of a birdman cult where people would, you know, swim out to this rock on the edge of the island and the competition was to come back with the first egg of the season from this, from a bird. And so there's the whole birdman thing. And then there was also this, the sort of feminine essence. So, I mean, if you think of the Moai, they're called Moai, the big stone statues, they're pretty masculine in essence. And, mm-hmm. but there's this feminine essence on the island as well. It's called, Te Pito o Te Henua, and it's like the belly button of the world, they call it. And it's this sort of big round rock surrounded by four smaller round rocks. And we all kind of like took turns putting our hands on the rock, and it's sort of like, oh yeah, feel the spiritual energy. And at the time I was sort of like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm just going to do this and who knows. But as I look back, the timing was pretty amazing, from this sort of transition from logical brain world to leap of faith world. And so it was sort of like, yeah, wow, there was some spiritual energy that infused. And when I think about even just the idea of Easter, whether you're religious or not, the Easter symbolizes the transformation from death to life again. And I was experiencing the death of my own status quo at that time. And so it was sort of like a transformational moment for me in my life. And all that timing worked together to really kind of produce this again, not that I necessarily realized it at the time, but in retrospect, going back and writing the book was when I really started thinking, whoa, there are some pretty serious parallels and synchronicities here. Mm-hmm. And so that awareness kind of emerged. And then I had one more con it left that I did 6 months later at the end of 2012, which was the solar eclipse marathon in Australia, which solar eclipses are all about alignment. So Earth, Sun, Moon, all completely aligned. So once again, sort of this sort of cosmic significance of finishing this one journey. And so the astronaut and the continents journey ended the same year in sort of slightly different ways with varying degrees of success. But it was the closure of a certain period, and the solar eclipse and alignment and all that transformation was sort of like, all right, and off you go, launched into the next phase and just see what happens.
Thank you to the Boulderthon for sponsoring this episode of the Running Thrill podcast. What is the Boulderthon, you ask? Well, on October 9th, 2022, yep, that is a few months away from now, there will be this second annual Boulderthon, which has a full marathon, a half marathon, a 10K, and a kids run. And it is run in one of the happiest cities in America. You are going to run at the foothills of the Rockies and join the Boulder community. Yes, that community where so many of the runners we love and look up to live. You never know, you might run into one of them while you're warming up. This community, Boulder, is one of the greatest meccas in the US. That is why so many professional and running focused people have flocked there, live there. Honestly, I would live there if I could. I'm not kidding. I really would love to live there. It is an amazing place to be. And for the first time in history, they have an epic downtown Boulder finish. How cool is that? Can I actually come with you if you decide to sign up for this race? It just sounds a lot of fun. And Boulderthon is sure to be an incredible event, just from what I am seeing here right now. You can check out their website by going to boulderthon.org. That's BOULDERTHON.org, boulderthon.org. And if you use code TINA, you can get $20 off the full or half marathon. So that's code TINA. That will get you $20 off the full or the half marathon. And friends, we've been trapped inside for so long. Let's go enjoy some of these races that the country, that the US has to offer. There are so many fun things to be doing. And this Boulderthon is added to my list for sure to be one to be doing. Maybe you will even see me there. Who knows? I may end up signing up. Go to boulderthon.org to check out more information and go do that race October 9th, 2022. Talk about the role running played. You mentioned it a little at the beginning, but you said you had that solar eclipse marathon was the last one, and both of the last two had been a bit of a spiritual, I don't want to say spiritual awakening, but something like that.
It works.
Mm-hmm. How did, yeah, I mean, you were obviously, you had I'm sorry, I've forgotten the indigenous name you had.
Oh, Rapa Nui.
Rapa Nui, that you had that marathon there while this was happening or just before this happened. But then for that final marathon, you were training through your feelings and training for the race. So talk us through the training for that final race and how running helped you, or maybe what reflecting back on the other races, knowing this was the final one. And as you said, this was preparing you for that next step as what am I doing next? Because you knew during that training period, okay, well, I don't have that lifelong dream, but I know I have this marathon and I want to finish this seven continent. But knowing that after that, you would be like, okay, what now? Talk us through some of the experiences of that final few months.
So great question. It's funny, the majority of my training for the last one was hill training, because the solar eclipse marathon was in Port Douglas, Australia, and
beautiful place.
It's totally beautiful. Yeah, speaking of reefs, right? Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, but the way the course was laid out, there was what they called the bump track. So it was pretty much a flat course with this one gigantic hill in the middle that was, it doesn't sound ridiculous, but something like 500 feet over a mile or something like that. I don't know if that sounds... That might not sound dramatic enough, but whatever it was super steep in not very much time. It was like straight up. And I didn't have any hills in my area that were that crazy, but I had hills. I was actually training in a national park and had trained there for the last three marathons, actually. So I knew the trails. I loved the trails. The running in nature part, I really loved. And so what I would do for hill training was just run up and down the hills, the biggest hills, as many times as I could. So I would like run to the top and then jog back down to the bottom and then run to the top. And I would, for the shorter ones anyway, that where I did that, I was always trying to go faster each time, to push myself to instead of slowing down, like to go faster on each repeat. And so for me, it was really about, I don't care how I do on the marathon. I just want to do well on this hill. and so the hill thing actually did come. So that was in the moment. So in the moment, I think I was so focused on that that in some ways it was nice to have something to focus on that was not sort of wallowing in the astronaut pain, as it were, because I had something that I was literally doing and I have to focus on this or it's just not going to get done. And so that part of the running where you literally have to be in the moment, you know, was really helpful. And I just remember being excited about how's this going to go and just being present, enjoying the runs, enjoying that peace, I guess. And then in the marathon itself, I did really well on the hill. I, you know, charged right up it. I passed a lot of people. It was really cool. And the rest of it, by the time I was, you know, getting to the end, it was hot and it was humid. And I was like, I'm so ready to be done. Where is the finish line? But I had done well on the hill. So I just felt really good. So in retrospect, as I look back, the hill thing was actually a theme that went through pretty much all the marathons. And it's symbolically to me represents the hills in life. So, you know, what I see as the meaning of a hill compared to a marathon is that the hill is right in front of you. It's a manageable chunk. So you don't have to worry about the finish line. It's like, there's a hill right here. Let's just get to the top. And so it's sort of it's a smaller step than the whole run itself. It gives you something concrete to focus on. And then you can kind of rest at the top and celebrate. Yay, I made it. And so I think in the hills of life, it's important to pause and rest and celebrate at the top before we just sort of plunge on like, okay, did that, but now there's 10 more. Like, no, let's pause and celebrate that what we've accomplished so far. And it also helps you kind of with the overwhelm of like, if you have a big project or a, what am I going to do with my life sort of moment that seems sort of like a marathon itself. Okay. I don't need to know what to do with the rest of my life. I'm just going to take one step and I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and just, you know, one foot in front of the other over and over again, eventually you arrive. And so I think this sort of seeking of not knowing what to do next can be paralyzing. And we think we can't start anything until we know how it's going to end, but that's really not how life works. So it really is just, let's take an exploratory step in this direction and see how that goes. And if that doesn't feel good, let's take a step in this other direction. So that's what the hills came to mean to me. And in that time in my life, when I sort of didn't know where the finish line was because I didn't know what I was going to do next. It was something smaller, manageable, concrete to focus on and celebrate too.
Thank you for that. One more question about that. When you did finish, when the race was over, maybe, you know, a week or so later when you'd done the race, where was your mind state at there?
I was just really excited. And I think also a little bit in surreal land, you know, I actually wrote in my journal, you know, yay, 5 years. And I completed my goal today. And it just felt like, whoa, that was a 5-year journey. And I just finished. So it was sort of this in awe of having done it and just being really excited about it. So people had asked me like, okay, so what are you going to do next? You're going to climb all the tallest mountains. And I'm like, no, can't it be enough? Can't it be enough that I did this?
And you were able to say that in the moment. Cause that was my reason for asking, because I know people say that especially when you take something massive like that, 7 continents, people are going to say, what's next? But you were able to kind of almost shut that down and say, because I feel like I would imagine many others would kind of feel that pressure to have a response of like, oh, I'm gonna pick something, but it'll be bigger and better than that, you know, like.
Yes, I think it was. I probably mostly said like, I mean, I don't know this. I'm happy with this. I don't know if I don't. I'm trying to remember what I would say, but I think it was probably mostly I don't know because, but also then like that spark of frustration, like seriously, what do you mean, like. That was amazing. And this is
what have you done today?
Yes. So it goes back to that whole good enough. Like when are we good enough? And we put so much pressure on ourselves to yes. do and do better. And so I actually do feel very grateful that I didn't feel the need to top it with something else. So because first of all, there wasn't actually anything else that, like, I knew I wasn't going to climb all the tallest mountains. That just literally did not appeal to me. I'm not going to go bike. I'm not going to do a triathlon. I actually don't particularly like cycling. I did one little sprint triathlon, but I'm not a cyclist. So I prefer to be on my feet. So I knew that Ironman was not in my future. And so I think there was a little bit of that frustration of why can't this be enough? But also at the same time, a piece of, I know it's enough. And if someone else is waiting for me to pick the next big thing, like it was more like, I'm just going to live life and savor life. Like that's the biggest adventure of all. And so that's now what, if someone asks me, oh, what are you going to, you know, what next amazing thing are you going to do? Just savoring the moment is amazing enough. So that's my answer now.
Oh, no, I love that. And, With the enough thing, with the trying to find, feel peace with who you are and what you do, what would be your thinking? I mean, it's easy for someone listening not to say, to have had the background that you have, to have done the degrees, to have done the rocket science, the engineering, all that background. But for someone who is, I would love to talk a little bit about the fact that I often talk to people who have this goal, a dream, they have something big they want, but they often put a timeline on it. And it seems to me too soon, kind of almost like a now or never, like it's got to be now. I would love for you to, as you did very well in saying 5 years, I'm going to take to do this. You didn't say I'm going to do 7 continents in 7 months, or I'm going to do 7 continents in 7 days.
Some people do it in 7 days. Like there's people yes. who actually have done like, that. So,
yeah. How did Crazy. You, what is your advice for someone who maybe in the past has been caught up in, because we all overestimate what we can do in the short term, you know? So what would be your advice for someone who has a dream, has something they really want, but can't seem to find that timeline of what is realistic?
Brilliant. Yes. I think that first of all, pausing and connecting to what it is that's important to you about the goal in the first place. So, you know, the goal behind the goal from earlier when we talked, what is it you think this achieving this goal is going to give you? What do you think you're going to feel? And what are ways that you're already there? Like, how are you already feeling that? If you want to run a marathon in a certain time or whatever, like, is it to feel accomplished? Is it because you feel excited about the power of your body? Is it like, that's kind of something that you can connect to on a daily basis. If it's to post it on social media, you know, maybe there's a different goal that we could be going for, right? Like, so posting it on social media, what's that going to give you? You know, so examine your motivations. And when you get to the deepest, most intrinsic one, connect to how you're already there. So if you can find your success already today, knowing that it's not tied to the future state, the future event, the future goal success, that actually takes off so much of the pressure that you can then work towards that goal, non-attached to outcome, as it were, because you're already there. You know that it's done. So can you be in that space of trusting that even if that goal doesn't happen, or if it happens, if it takes longer to happen than you think, you're already successful and you're already there. It's already a win. Then I think that, again, eases the pressure, helps you get there too, because you're not being blocked by the pressure you're putting on yourself, and allow life to happen and allow that dream to emerge as it goes, one step at a time. And just because, for example, I didn't actually start from the beginning and say, I want to finish this in 5 years. I planned my marathon, and then I planned my next one. And then I planned a couple more, and I had this. So it kind of went with so if it had taken longer than 5 years, that would have been fine. How did they unfold in a timing where I had enough leave to take, or it worked for my schedule? Like, two of them I did pretty close together, so I could, you know, train once and run two marathons, you know. So allow life to guide you, and maybe don't be so attached. And then that doesn't mean we don't work to achieve goals. It just means know why you're doing it. Know what the real motivation is. Trust that you are already there, and do it with ease and flow, and see how it falls out.
I love that. Thank you. Is there anything else about running, about that journey through those continents or since, that you would like to share with the community?
I think that it does kind of go back to the why are you doing it? Mm. I think running has such a capacity to connect us to our bodies, to the rhythm of the earth, to our own nature, especially because I am a big fan of grounding and putting your bare feet on the earth and really connecting in to our earth mother, that letting yourself plug back into your own true nature and to the reasons you got started running in the first place, not to show off or prove that you prove anything, period.
Do you not think a lot of people do get into running to prove something?
Yes, I do. I do. So yes, when you say connect to the reasons you started in the first place, I would say the deeper why of what are you trying to prove? And then kind of dig down deeper to, first of all, you don't need to prove anything to anyone, and you don't need to prove anything to yourself. So what is it you actually want? So it would then be connecting to what do you want, and see if running is a thing that helps you achieve that. And maybe it's not. It's not for everybody, I guess. Maybe it's walking, but some kind of being in nature, I think, is just so important to reconnect us to our humanity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, one final thing I have to ask from is it the aerospace community? What would you say that you?
Yeah, sure. Aerospace. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Climate change. What is the general, like, are people seeing this, or is it pretty clear right now that you mentioned our Mother Earth? Is she hurting? Like, just tell us a bit about, I just would love to hear from your perspective. I've seen documentaries about, you know, astronauts saying they could see things, and it was when they saw the view of the Earth, that's when they realized, wow, this is so fragile, so precious, we need to protect this. Tell us just some general thinking from the community.
Yeah, well, I will say that I personally am not qualified to speak on behalf of the community. So this is just one person's opinion. But yes, it was that picture of the Earth taken from the moon on Apollo 8, I believe, which was the first time they saw it from behind the moon, did spark this environmental movement. And so it's beautiful. Everybody does talk about the pale blue dot and the view of Earth from space, that you don't see the land borders, you don't see the, you know, all the things that we obsess about on a daily basis on the ground here. And so I think that perspective is a gift from the aerospace community. And so I think, me personally, that seriously, more humans coming awake to their spiritual purpose, coming awake to their own inherent creativity, to their own alignment, is what will heal the earth and bring us to into a better world, because it brings us away from clashing with each other and fighting over material things that are not even of the earth, right? Like so it's I think it's every human becoming more of who they truly are that is what's going to change the world and heal the earth.
I love that. I have to admit that when I think about like an American flag being on the moon, it just, you know, I'm in America, I'm surrounded by Americans, but it just kind of makes me laugh because I'm like, really? Like, shouldn't we have like an earth flag? Like, this is how, like you said about the borders, like that always, I'm kind of like, I've never quite understood why it wasn't like Team Earth.
Yeah, or just, yeah, I mean, I don't know why we need to have a flag at all, personally.
That's true, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I guess that continues the colonialism, the owning of things. But I shouldn't have really even said that. But thank you so much for, I love your way of thinking. I love the perspective you have and your background and how that's made you who you are. And you can see you have this aligned version of yourself that just is you. Are there any parting words you would like to give to the listeners about if they feel like, you know, here, be you thrown around? I don't know what that means. What would you say there?
Yes. That's a tough one because that also, I struggle with that too. You know, find your passion is one of the most debilitating things you can say to someone sometimes, but it's really, The first step really is to pause and breathe and take a moment and literally ask a question, you know, plant a seed into the universe and say, what am I here for? And see what arises. And maybe, you know, just following your joy, following your fun. So if you put a song on your phone and dance around for like 5 minutes or, you know, go back and read that fun science fiction book that you haven't read since you were 13 or whatever, and do something that reconnects you to your joy, because we are literally meant to be in joy. Like that's how we are at our best. That's how we're most creative. So if you can take just a few minutes a day to start there, then you might start to notice a pattern of what emerges for you. And so I don't know what it means to be me. Take little baby steps and do something fun, do something creative, see where it takes you.
I love that. And I think I just want to add that what makes you, you, I mean, I think often we are looking for one glaring, like giant light that's like we're attracted to, but it might be just doing little things that to you seem fun in your day-to-day life. Like you mentioned, putting on a song that makes you feel good. So listen to it. Or like I mentioned earlier about the planets. I was reading all these nonfiction books. I love nonfiction books. I love learning about that kind of stuff. But one day I was like, you know what? Like my daughter was asking me about planets and stuff. And I thought, you know what? I actually would love to learn a little bit more. So I got out this book called The Secret Life of Planets. Very, very like, I don't want to say dry, but like very intense. And I'd say 60% of it went straight over my head. But like I enjoyed reading about it. And so that is a good example, or both of those are good examples of like, it doesn't have to be one, like, here's my path. But it's just little day-to-day things. That doesn't mean I'm reading about planets. That doesn't mean I'm going to train to be an astronaut. Yeah. It doesn't mean I'm going to buy myself a $2,000 I'm blanking on the word.
Telescope.
it just meant that I had a desire to follow something that felt right to me. Who cares what the other people think? So follow that. So I just wanted to add that there, that it, yeah. Thank
you. Yes. And the little tidbit, who cares what other people think? That's so huge. Cause a lot of times what keeps us from doing that, from following our joy of life, or if we want to do something now, also creativity is not just art. It's not just drawing or painting or sculpting or whatever. Like it's, there's so many different things that are creative acts, like cooking or making a lunch for a kid or like going on a walk in nature. These are all things that are creative, but it's not about what other people think. It's about what brings you the joy. And you know, eventually they'll get around to it too. You know, usually when people kind of put you down for that, it's because they're secretly jealous because they want to do it too. So yes, model the way, lead the way, do this thing because we need more people doing it.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I really appreciate you. Your book, Running the World, tell us, I will put links in the show notes. Tell us anything else you want about that and where else people can find you.
Yes, absolutely. Running the World it's on Amazon and it's also at my website, resilienceactually.com. And you can also find me on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Melissa Corley Carter.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the nuggets of wisdom you've left us with today and look forward to seeing where that path leads you next.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tina. Looking forward to seeing where your path leads you. And I'm really grateful for the work you're doing in the world. Thank you for being you.
Hi, friends. Just a quick message to say a big thank you to the Running for Real team. While I may be the face of Running for Real and the voice behind the podcast, there are a group of people who are working tirelessly to provide everything that runners could need within our community to make our community stronger, better, and evolve and grow and learn from one another. We are working really hard to make Running for Real the place we believe it can be within our community. I just want to take a moment to thank everyone on our team. That is Victoria, Stacy, Sandy, Sally, Maria, Kelsey, Kat, Jeremy, and Erica. I appreciate each and every one of you and the hard work that you put in. Now let's get back to the show.
I told you that was a unique one. How cool was that? Thank you so much to Melissa for sharing with us. And what a good story about when life doesn't turn out how you expect or how you hope. It doesn't mean your life is over. It doesn't mean that things won't be good again. So I loved her story there. Thank you for listening to us today. I just want to remind you of a few events we have coming up. We actually do still have the bi-weekly Together 22 meetups. Those are on Zoom every other Tuesday. The best way you can find out more about those is by going to runningforreal.com and signing up for the newsletter. I will email you a link directly to come join us. It is so wonderful. Just really special time there. And secondly, if you are going to be running Boston, come join Tommy Runs and I for a shakeout at the Tracksmith Track House on Sunday, April 17th. I really would love to see you there. You can find out more information in the show notes or on the Tracksmith website. And the show notes are going to be at runningforreal.com/episode294. And I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. Tracksmith is a sponsor today, and that's not why I mention them. With the shakeout, that's just one of the cool things they do on the side, allowing me the opportunity to record a Together Run with you and host a shakeout. But you can donate 5% of your order to Runners for Public Lands if you use code TINA15, or you can go to the link in the show notes where you can find out some of my favorite items. You can also just get the link directly so that you don't have to go anywhere else. And you also will get free shipping with that. I also want to thank Inside Tracker. You can go to insidetracker.com/Tina to go get yourself 25% off to check out how your blood is doing, how your body is doing, how you are on the inside as we prepare to go into this exciting spring season. And finally, I want to thank the Boulderthon. Such a cool race. If you haven't signed up for it, haven't checked it out, go to boulderthon.org. There's also a link in the show notes. Really cool opportunity for us. I'm actually going to check it out and consider it myself and see if I can see you there. I would love to see you there. Thank you so much for listening, my friends. I really appreciate you. And I'll see you on Monday for a Together Run. And on Wednesday for a running reunion episode. If you missed the one on Wednesday, go check that out. So good. These are just short 15-minute long episodes that are just uplifting and will help you feel good in a world that, quite frankly, feels like it's falling apart sometimes. Check out in the feed of wherever you're listening to this and you can find out more. Thanks, friends. I'll see you soon.